This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 275. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
It came from Forever Evil in 3D. Do Adam West and Arkham go together? And I think Disney skipped this version of Snow White. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, September 22nd, 2013. I'm Mark.
And I'm Batman.
Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. I'm Mindy. Just remember, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
So, Mark, I'm going to just jump in here real quick.
Yes.
I'm feeling a little bit like Batman today.
Are you? I got that impression for some reason. I don't know what it was.
Okay. Just to let you know.
Okay. Well, we got a third week of Villains Month, so more of these gimmicky 3D covers. And we first get these two very different stories from Charles Soule, who I think has become a great utility writer for DC. He seems to be able to step into any story and make it work as a writer, any character. I'm thinking he could be the next Jeff Lemire or even a Jeff Johns.
Okay.
But we'll start with Swamp Thing Arcane 23.1 by Soule and Seiss. So this comes right out of the Rot World storyline, and it's certainly not for the squeamish. Arcane has been trapped in hell, where his version of hell, where nothing can actually rot. And we get this great shot where he's left husks of himself all around him in this field.
Mm-hmm.
Really creepy.
Yes.
And Abby, who's now the Rot Avatar, arrives and wants to know about her mother. So we get some of Anton's history, where he's from the 1800s originally, and as a child, he found this dead rabbit in a trap that's like maggoty and eats it. Ew.
Yes, you.
And this is what got him started on the whole rot thing, and apparently,
well,
proved to the.
I'm sure he was already, like, aimed at the rot thing.
Yes.
But this is what, like, pushed him over into being acceptable to the Parliament of Decay.
Exactly. And he tells a tale of his wife, who he purposely infects to see if she could survive with the rot within her. He then, at the end, says that Abby's mother was actually a whore and not this woman that he's talking about.
Right. And this woman may not even be actually dead, right?
Right.
Because she just kind of disappears.
Exactly.
And he tells Abby that she is actually the one that sucked all the life out of her real mother.
Yes.
And she died.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's like two or three stories here, any of which may actually be the truth or none may be the truth, because he is a villain after all,
yes,
as he makes very clear. So it's like, I may be telling you a bunch of lies.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good story. And it was, you know, I wouldn't have guessed that it was another writer necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Now, the 3D cover, I thought in this case was very good, although a little disgusting. Forever Evil tie-in is essentially zero, which is what we see in a lot of these Villains Month. Action Comics Lex Luthor 23.3 by Soule, again, and Bermudez. It's the story right before Forever Evil number one. We're seeing like a prequel to that. Lex is released from jail. He's realizing he kind of enjoyed his time off there where he could just sit and think. And he's concerned, like, why didn't the alien, Superman, show up to see him leave? You know, where is he at?
Why isn't he watching him?
Right.
This is like I should be the most important thing to Superman.
Yes. He taunts a security guard with his prison coveralls and basically says, you know, you can get a lot of money for this on the market, I'm sure. Says, all you have to do is come over and take it out of my hands. And
I certainly wouldn't have gone near him.
No, the guard doesn't do it. Back at LexCorp, he does this quick plastic surgery to repair his burned face, which I think it was burned during an Action Comics issue.
And yeah, I'm sure that plastic surgery is that quick and you can recover from it instantly.
He tests out a new battle suit. He activates Project Ghost Town, which turns out to be his own space shuttle, all while he's destroying the life of someone who tried to take over one of his very small, tiny subsidiaries and destroying this guy's life.
One that he didn't even like.
Right. But he had to make a point. What's the deal with the shuttle? Well, he sent it up with a full crew to fail and explode upon reentry just to see if Superman would save it.
Yes.
And he's like, well, if he doesn't save it, then it's a black mark against Superman. And it also proves whether he's around or not.
Right.
So he's now off to take that helicopter ride that we saw in Forever Evil number one. The 3D cover is meh. It's all right. And the Forever Evil tie-in, yes, we actually have one here. Justice League of America Shadow Thief, number 7.3 by Falgo and Hardin. So we get a new version of the Shadow Thief character who was apparently introduced in the Hawkman title that's now been canceled. And the thief is female for the first time. Now, the Shadow Thief's abilities pretty much stay the same. The thief can transport to anywhere where there's a shadow. So you can go into a shadow anywhere and come out of a shadow anywhere else. Can become immaterial and can create shadow constructs. And then finally, she has the ability to cloak herself within the shadow skin.
Well, it's almost like in this instance, the shadow skin is a suit that she puts on.
Right.
And so that's where her powers derive from. I think in the past, hasn't it been like inherent or magic? Or?
It depends. They've done different versions, but I think there's been other versions where there's a suit involved.
Okay. But the suit is almost sticking to her at times.
Very.
And she can't get it off.
A la Venom over in Marvel. She's this spy who's obsessed about stopping Mossad terrorists. Oh, and aliens as well.
Well, I don't think at the beginning, before she becomes the Shadow Thief, it's just Mossad.
Right.
Alien she doesn't know about yet.
Right. So she finds this biohazard that was from Argus and takes it to her scientist mother and brother.
Because she also has curiosity.
Yeah. And so they open it up inside this biohazard chamber and it kills them and then infects her with the shadow powers through this suit. This skin.
I think the skin was to protect her from that virus, whoever was handling the
virus. Right, but it gives her the powers.
It gives her the powers, but it does really grossly kill her brother and her mom.
Yeah.
That's when she finds out about the aliens. But through this whole thing, I didn't really get the idea that she was so villainous because she seemed to want to defend Earth against these horrible aliens and terrorists who are dealing arms.
Right.
So, is she a villain?
Well, she's in Villains Month, so
yeah,
I guess that's how DC
defines
her, but it's very hard to see her as a villain here.
Maybe she did something in Hawkman that made her a villain.
Yeah.
Well, she stole things from the Hawk people.
True.
Although it sounded almost like she got this weapon or something from a Hawkman voluntarily that she used in this to kill the other
Thanagarians.
Thanagarians.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. So, the 3D cover, it's okay. And again, the Forever Evil tie-in is zero. The Flash, The Rogues, 23.3 by Buccolato and Zurcher.
Now, you know, when you start off a book and it says, this happens before the book that came out a week ago.
Yes, that they could have
controlled. And these are all number ones. Why couldn't you have put the other book out now, and this went out a week ago?
That's a fine point. Clearly, they had set up the schedule, and then some editor at the last second went, oh, geez, I wasn't actually paying attention. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
No. Well, it was the same thing with the Lex Luthor book, you know.
Well, but in that case, it didn't hurt that we're just seeing what happened before
No, and it doesn't hurt here either,
right.
But It just seems a little silly.
Yeah. So this is really more of a review of the Rogues than technically a new story. Because the Rogues are going to get their own Forever Evil miniseries. And this is more of an introduction to that than anything else. So we start at the events of Forever Evil number one. And then we cut to a flashback of an earlier bank vault job where Glider is running the team and they decide that they have to pull out of this job because otherwise there's people in the building who are going to be killed. And she says, well, the Rogues don't kill. Glider also wants to save her boyfriend, Mirror Master, who's stuck in the mirror dimension and feels that her abilities, which are essentially to be this immaterial, ghostly being, kind of out-of-body experience from her actual body, which is in a coma in a hospital, tries to pull him out and basically puts herself in danger, her body in danger to do it, and puts her even, I guess, deeper in the coma or to the point where they're losing her life signs.
Mm-hmm.
So we then see them meet at the crashed Justice League Watchtower, just as in Forever Evil number one. They get the speech from the Syndicate, and they're like, I don't know. They return to Keystone to find this massive damage, which was caused by both Ultraman and the Eclipse, and Grodd's attack in Grodd number one. All this massive damage, and all of this has put Glider's life in the balance. The whole thing about them having to get revenge because of Glider, it's like, well, they don't know if Glider's dead at this point.
Right.
We don't know. It's unclear whether they knew that she tried to go and save him or they were already gone by that point to go see the Justice League Watchtower. So they're going to have revenge, but it's unclear why they have revenge.
Well, I think this is sort of like we've seen with a couple of the other villains. No, I wanted to be the one to kill Superman. Well, this is still their city, and if anybody's going to wreck it, it's going to be them.
True.
I think maybe that's more along the lines of what they're thinking.
Yeah. It just seems a little ill-designed here because, as you said, clearly they're setting up these other events for Forever Evil where different villains and groups of villains are like, okay, we have to go fight the Syndicate.
Yes.
And it's just like, that's the goal, and, well, we'll come up with some half-baked excuse as to why.
Yes.
The 3D cover is meh, and the Forever Evil tie-in, yep, you definitely got it in this case. Batman 66, number 3, by Parker Quinones and Jarrell. So this is the digital first Adam West continuity series, continuing, which generally gives us two stories. In the first one, we see both Red Hood and Harley Quinn being introduced into the Adam West continuity, neither of which had been there before. Red Hood wants revenge on Joker for some reason.
I'm going to say it's not really Harley Quinn yet.
Right, right.
It's Dr.
Exactly.
Quinzel.
Exactly. He, Red Hood, demands Joker's release or he's going to attack Gotham. And we also see the introduction of Arkham Asylum into the Adam West continuity. It was always before just, you know, Gotham Penitentiary.
Right.
And we see some very nice cameos from Shame, Egghead, Siren, and Riddler. And they're all in their little cages. And I think the latter is the John Astin version of the Riddler. I'm not sure. It looks a little more like him than it looks like the Frank Gorshin Riddler. Because they said they were going to try to put in at various points the various versions of
the
these
villains. Yeah.
Played by different actors. And this Professor Overbeck is controlling the patients with some sort of brain regulator.
And I think rather than controlling, he wants to be curing them. But
right, yeah, it as a way to cure them. And I had to look it up. This Professor Overbeck was seen in the Adam West series in a Mad Hatter episode.
Ah.
So this is actually from the series. Dr. Quinn, as you said, she's not yet Harley Quinn, but clearly that's what they've put her in there for, refers to Joker as Patient J, of course, later to be Mr. J.
Yes.
We get some really great artwork on Cesar Romero's Joker because he even has the mustache covered with the makeup. It's very impressive here. the dynamic duo and the Joker team up, and it turns out Joker is actually controlling Red Hood, a.k.a. Overbeck.
But he doesn't know he's doing
no.
it.
No, he doesn't know it. He just puts the hood goes on, and suddenly he's this other supervillain.
Well, and I can see they're implying that Joker's brain is so screwed up that this brain regulator actually works in reverse.
Reverse, yeah. Basically, the heroes stop both of them.
Yes, it's not a two-part story.
No, but in the second story, we meet Vincent Price's Egghead, who we just saw in a cameo in the previous. And Egghead was a character invented for the show, was never seen, at least before that, in the comics. I don't know if he's ever been seen in comics form before. Can't really say much about the art in this particular story. It was a little muddy, I thought. It is a standard death trap story. It involves a glass egg and a blimp. But Egghead seems more interested in getting out the right egg quip, because that's Egghead's bit, is everywhere he can make an egg pun, he's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the heroes escape and stop the villain. One thing I thought was interesting was Warden Crichton is portrayed as a black woman, which in the 1960s seems very highly unlikely.
Well, but this isn't, I mean, I know they're saying Batman 66, but I think they're probably also trying to modernize it a little bit.
Sure. Fables 133 from Vertigo by Willingham and Buckingham. We haven't gone into this comic for a little while, so a number of things have been going on. Brandish, the current bad guy, who apparently can't be killed.
Well, because his heart is somewhere else.
Literally old, somewhere else.
The old mythology of, you know, you hide your heart so you can't be killed.
Yes. He's chained up in this pit, and Rose is got a concrete mixer ready there to fill it up. And they figure, well, if they can't kill him, they'll entomb him. And says, I'm going to do this unless you agree to work for me. And she thinks she can somehow rehabilitate him.
Well, that's her new goal in life, is to redeem people.
Right. But Snow is there, and she prefers the concrete method. And so Rose and Snow have it out. And Snow says, if you go forward with this plan, you're cut off from the Cubs. You're, you know, that's
we
it.
We are done.
We are done. Because this is a terrible idea, and it's only going to end in tragedy. But Rose is adamant, because this whole round table redeeming people thing is her quest. And we finally learn a little bit about Snow and the infamous dwarves.
Well, I'm thinking this was already in here once.
I don't remember there ever being.
I seem to remember it. And the dwarf house, she was treated as a slave, and she involved sexual abuse. And
okay, I don't remember this at all. Was this part of the original Grimm story, I'm thinking?
I don't know if it was or not. I doubt it, but boy, it's certainly not Disney.
No. So this is why Snow has this core of steel about her. That she's like, well, you know, if I survive that, I can survive anything.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the birds who have been sent out by Rose to find potential knights have found one. The goblin who accidentally killed in an earlier fable story, the one about the baseball game.
Right.
And was banished for it. You know, now is the chance for him to be redeemed. And meanwhile, the witches arrive with bad news. They can delay Snow's fate, but not deflect it, meaning that she was supposed to die, and they delayed it from happening. They can't stop it. She's going to die at some point from a sword through the chest, and there's no idea when it's going to happen. But do fables ever really die, especially as powerful a fable as Snow White?
Well, you know, that's what they originally said, and yet we still haven't seen Boy Blue come back.
Right. Yet.
Yeah. So we'll see. And then, again, maybe it takes a while for them to come back, in which case she'd miss her cubs growing up. And,
right.
You know, it's hard enough with Therese and one of them dead and, you know.
Right.
Big be gone.
Well, sorry, there is no Who's on the Cover this week. Damn you, Double Issues. So I want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes and leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm Batman. Oh, wait, that was horrible. Bye.
Bye-bye.